sequel with you, Jay.
You're damn right it was me, Dipple. Welcome to the Lateral Press, you filthy animals. I'm Jay. I've got Ramiz with me and Dipple. What's going on, boys?
Not much, mate.
Not much. Have you seen wrestling this week?
Nah, not really, eh?
It's pretty interesting. It had the Roman Reigns heel turn this week.
So he definitely turned heel or what?
Well, I'm assuming so. It's Paul Heyman's in his corner. If it's Paul Heyman's in his corner, I don't see him being a face.
So what happened there?
Well, it was just Roman Reigns coming back at the end of the Strowman and Fiend, the Fiend match. They had the last man standing match at SummerSlam. And then post the match, Roman Reigns just comes in with his big ass white teeth.
Oh yeah, his new teeth, eh?
Still creeps me out. But yeah, he comes in, spears Strowman, chairs, shots him, spears Fiend, and then fast forward to SmackDown, and you have him aligning with Paul Heyman.
So does that definitely make him a heel, or does that make Paul Heyman a face?
I would assume he'd be a heel for now, unless something happens in the future that says otherwise.
But wait, what the fuck's a heel?
So heel is basically someone who's like not upright. Like people who start cheating, people who start using interferences, they have people who come just don't do what the regular good guy two-shoes would do.
Good guy two-shoes, eh?
Yeah, good guy two-shoes.
Good guy two-shoes.
So the bad guy, the villain.
Yeah, the villain. It'd be like in comic hero books, you'd have like Batman, but then you'd have the Joker. Without the Joker, there's nothing. Batman doesn't mean much. So it'd be the same thing in wrestling. Without the heel, there's no good guy.
Okay, and what are some examples of some other heels from, you know, back in the day or modern heels or whatever it may be?
I mean, the biggest one would be Hulk Hogan being the third man in the IWO. That's a big one where he became a heel. A good example of a good heel is in recent era, you have Brock Lesnar, you have Paul Heyman, you have like Seth Rollins. In the past, it would be like a big one would be Rowdy Piper. He was a big heel, one of the greatest of all time. You got some others?
Sergeant Slaughter was the greatest babyface ever, but him as a heel is a really big heel. MJF is the greatest heel of modern wrestling. Maxwell Jacob Friedman.
Taking that?
I don't know. Everyone, a lot of people can play one side, but not everyone can play both.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people who play both really well.
Yeah, so what about this Hulk Hogan being one of the most, you know, noticeable heels from when he joined the NWO? What happened there?
So we'd have to go back to the start of Hulk Hogan in the 1980s. So Hulk Hogan is pretty much the poster boy for the good guy. From the 1980s to the 1990s, he was the guy with the eat your, say your prayers, eat your vitamins. He was on TV all the time. Like, kids looked up to him. People looked up to him because he represented everything that was good. But in the 1990s, especially at the start, people were starting to get tired of it. Like, the crowd started evolving. Like, audience weren't as receptive to, like, the goody two-shoes guy, as I said before. Obviously, the NWO, being Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, they came in as the outsiders. They had a whole storyline going where they were, like, basically invading because they were fresh off from the WWF at the time. They're basically invading the WCW. They had the group called the Outsiders. And people were like, it was starting to build to a point where everyone knew they had a group and they started promoting that they had a third man. But when it came down to the reveal of the third man, it ended up being Hulk Hogan, who was actually the biggest face in the biggest good guy in all of wrestling at the time.
No one would have ever thought Hulk Hogan would have ever been a heel at that point in time. He was John. He was John Cena in the 80s. There's no way this guy who, you know, looks after all the fucking kids, inspires all the kids, tells them to do all this good stuff. There's no way that guy is going to turn his back on a generation of people.
I mean, his theme song was, "I am a real American," and Americans were patriotic, as they always are.
Yeah, this guy saved America from all the bad foreign people all the way through the 80s, you know? He fought the war for the Americans, the real American. No way, man. No way is that guy ever going to turn his back on us.
And come to the reveal on NW, at the WCW, you know, being the third man, attacking the guys he thought he was supposed to save. And from there, the crowd just realize this is not the Hulk Hogan we knew.
Yeah, so Nash and Hall were beating down Macho Man and that, and Hulk Hogan came out for his usual Hulk Hogan save that we have seen for like, what, 10 years, 16 years at that point.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan's coming down the ramp. Everyone's like, yes, here comes the Hulkster to save America again. And then he comes in the ring, scares Hall and Nash out of the ring, and then drops the big leg on Macho Man Randy Savage. And the crowd fucking, oh, they almost stunned silent until they start throwing trash in the ring. Because he did the exact opposite of what they thought he was going to, what anyone thought he would ever do. He fucking shit on everyone's face.
Well, so they weren't receptive to him turning into a bad guy? At the start, at least?
At the start, they were not. But that becomes a bit of a different discussion because even though he was a heel, he was definitely accepted as like, he was more loved at the time because the crowd really changed. But it doesn't mean he wasn't a bad guy at all because he was doing all the bad things that defined a heel at the time. He was taking off his belt. He would whip people with it. That's a classic heel move because that's using a weapon.
It was risky, man. Like, no one in the industry knew if Hogan could even be a bad guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was a big risk that they took. Even when they first started shooting the NWO promos, these guys were shooting it like a real shoot. Like, they were just being cool guys. And Hulk Hogan was trying to cut a promo. Like, eat your vitamins, say your prayers promo, but a bad version. And it sounded corny as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
So he himself didn't even really know how to be a bad guy, but lo and behold.
And probably the biggest heel turn of all time.
Well, yeah, lo and behold, he definitely rebooted his career. Bad guy Hulkster, the Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
I mean, in saying that, without that heel turn, there'd probably be no Hulk Hogan. Like, he probably would not be known as great as he is today.
Oh, I don't know about that, bro.
Well, that's a pretty big call, bro.
Because like, even though like everyone knew him from the 80s as the biggest face, but without his heel turn, I don't think he would have cemented himself as great as he is today.
Nah. If I ask people about Hulk Hogan, they don't tell me about the Hulk Hogan in black and white that you know, did the finger poke of doom. They talk about the Hogan that body slammed Andre. Yeah, I don't know about that one.
I guess that's the self-opinion one.
I liked Hollywood Hogan a lot better, of course. I guess to a point he appealed to a newer generation because, you know, we didn't like that phony shit.
I mean, it was a very
attitude, thing that, my friend.
It was a very thing that made him less likable. But then on the other spectrum, you had Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon, who wasn't really well known for being on the screen at the time. He was just a commentator. Some people knew him as the owner of WWF at the time. Obviously, his father was Vince McMahon Sr., who also owned the WWF. And before that, got bought out by Vince. In the 1997, you had Vince McMahon, who started taking a bit more of a TV role. Like, he started taking more of an authority role at the time. He had a bit of, like, things going here and there until Survivor Series, where he screwed over Brett. Now, that story, do you want me to go into that?
The Montreal Screwjob. How long you got?
TLDR.
Too long didn't read, for anyone that doesn't know what that means.
It is a
Reddit term, just so we know. But yes, go into the Montreal Screwjob, please, because I don't know anything about it.
So the Montreal Screwjob starts with Bret Hart. Bret Hart being the champion at the time, the WWE champion. Now, what happened is, because at the time, WWF at the time was having financial issues, they weren't the number one company at the time anymore. They weren't making as much money, and they were probably overpaying a lot of wrestlers.
Yeah, I guess you can explain that. These go hand in hand. The Hogan heel turn was, what, 96? 95?
96.
96. That effectively turned the tide of the war, and, you know, Hogan as a bad guy and the NWO altogether was the craziest thing, not only on wrestling, but, like, on TV at that time.
Yep.
It was transcending everything. They were on everywhere. So they turned the tide and everyone was watching WCW. And WCW was the shit. And because of that, the WWF, their viewership started to decline. And they started to lose, you know, they started losing people.
Revenue.
And yeah, they started losing money. Everyone wanted to be a part of the NWA. It was the hottest thing in wrestling. And because of that, the WWF started running into financial issues.
And with WCW being backed by Ted Turner, who was a billionaire, they're openly writing checks to wrestlers where they can basically say how much they actually want and just put their number down, and the fact that they're now part of WCW.
Fucking Hall and Nash, when they signed to the WCW, they said, you know, we're going to make this X amount of money, and it's going to be, I don't know, just the highest figure that on the roster. And they go, but if you sign someone after us, and you pay them more than us, then you got to bump us up to that pay. And it just, their money just kept going up and up and up and up. They could not get paid less than anyone else on the WCW roster.
Wow.
In fairness, they probably did make that whole 1997-98. Without them, there'd be no NWA, and effectively there would be no...
Well, yeah.
So they're probably worth it. But obviously, this all led to problems with WCWF because there were wrestlers who were...
WCWF.
So it was the WWF. Because there were wrestlers being offered big contracts. And that's where Bret Hart comes in, because Bret Hart was the WWF champion at the time.
Yeah, so when another way that they intertwined was after Hogan left because they were going with Bret. Bret was their new Hogan. So they wanted to they wanted to knock him down, and then they wanted to bank on him, and they signed him to a long ass contract to bank him as their new Hogan. He was the guy that they were investing in.
So it came down to it came closer to the Survivor Series. At that time, he was still WWF champion, and they were starting to invest a bit more into Shawn Michaels as well. So I don't know if that goes hand in hand, but it definitely does play a factor in Bret's position.
So they wanted to bank on Bret. So they signed him to a long-ass contract with a lot of money. And then they realized that Bret actually wasn't getting over. The new face of the company was Shawn. Shawn was the one that was getting everything. Shawn was the one who was like driving up all the ratings. So they were like, maybe we invested in the wrong guy. So they put more money to Shawn, and then they were like, all right, Bret, you know, this long-ass contract we guaranteed you. They wanted to back out of that contract.
Mm.
And then do Bret over, and Bret was fucking spewing.
So this is where Vince McMahon comes in, because obviously Vince McMahon being the owner, he was trying to explain to Bret that he actually said Bret can go sign that WCW contract.
Yeah.
After he backed out of his one.
Yeah. So effectively what was happening is Bret was basically unlocked to leave WWF at the time. He was like, everyone kind of knew he was going to WCW. But the problem is he was a WWF champion at the time.
Mm.
Now, the problem is in the past, people have gone over to other promotions. So we've talked about it in the last podcast, where people will turn up with the championship in another promotion. And obviously this kind of dilutes the company that had the champion in the first place. So with all this going down, it came down to them trying to switch the champion from Bret to Shawn. And this was at Survivor Series. But the problem was that Bret doesn't want to lose in his home ground. So the Survivor Series was in Montreal.
The Montreal Screwjob, man, you get so many different perspectives and so many different takes on the story that you don't really know what really happened. Some people don't even think it was a shoot. Some people think it was all a setup.
Yeah.
According to Bret Hart, he said he would lie down for Shawn in Canada. And then Shawn said to him, that's great, Bret. You're a great guy, but I wouldn't fucking do that for you. And Bret turned around and went, well, you know what? I'm not fucking doing it for you either, bro. Fuck you, man. You know what? So, they couldn't decide on a finish together because they fucking hated each other in real life. And yeah, so they got to the show and they still hadn't had a clean finish. But all Vince knew was Bret had to
drop that title,
man. He can't risk him showing up to WCW. If he showed up to WCW with the WWF title, bro, that's the nail in the coffin for the WWE. There wouldn't be no WWE today. Everyone would be like, WCW is a shit. Fuck the WWF.
We might not even have wrestling today. What effectively happened was Viscous Man, during the match, Shawn Michaels had him in the sharpshooter, which is actually...
Well, explain their plan to finish, but...
I'm not sure what the plan finish was, to be honest.
The plan finish, what they told Bret when Bret got to the show was that the match was going to end in a big schmoz. So a big breakdown, and it was going to be no winner, and then Bret was going to drop the title to him on... Oh, he was going to relinquish the title on Raw, and then Shawn would have got it. Then there would have been no winner at Survivor Series. That's what they told Bret when Bret got there.
I mean, I've heard a few versions, and I know there was a version with Undertaker coming... There's
too many versions, bro.
Like, there was a version with Undertaker going to Vince, talking about, he can't screw him and stuff like that. I don't know. But, yeah, effectively what happened in the end happened was... While Shawn Michaels had Bret Hart in the sharpshooter, which is a submission move, Vince McMahon came out and just told him to ring the bell. And as soon as they ring the bell, the match was over and it was classified as Shawn Michaels beat Bret Hart.
El Hebner gets a lot of heat for that, but when it came down to it, he didn't have the like
pulled.
He didn't do it straight away. So they told El Hebner, the referee, on the way out to the on the way out from Gorilla, they put him aside and they go, when Sean puts Brett in the sharpshooter, just call for the bell. That's it. Whether he taps or not, just call for the bell. And then he put him in the sharpshooter in the match, and El Hebner, he didn't have the balls to do it because he knew it was wrong, you know? Not the balls. He had too much heart to really screw that. But then Vince jumped up. So because of that, Vince jumped up out of the commentary booth and became Shoot Vince and had to blow his cover because he was just a commentator at the time. No one knew he was anything more than that. Vince had to get up out of his seat and call for the bell himself. And then El Hebner called for the bell.
Yeah.
But then weren't people like, what is this commentator doing? Why is he just calling for the bell?
Yeah,
and why are they actually doing it?
And I was like, what the fuck's going on? And then after the match, Bret Hart gets up, spits in Vince's face, trashes everything, writes WCW in the air on hard cam. Yeah, and then, you know, they had to explain themselves on the next episode of Raw, and Vince had to get up and, because he was the one who got up, called for the bell, got spat on, got yelled at. And I was like, you know, what's going on? Who's this guy? And he had to explain himself on Raw the next night.
And that's where the Brett screwed Brett comes from.
Yeah, so what's that?
So basically, in order to explain, it was supposed to be a press conference, and this wasn't supposed to be for a wrestling audience, it was supposed to be for general media, because it was just explaining what happened in the night before. And he came up with all these reasons on what happened, and in the end, the main answer was, it wasn't that he screwed Brett, it was Brett screwed Brett. And so he twisted the narrative in his way.
What happened? What do you mean Brett screwed Brett? What's going on?
It basically comes down to like the stuff we were explaining before with like the WWE title, not WWF title being on Brett, and Brett not wanting to drop it in Montreal. Things like this, like it just like became like a fuse for Vince to do something that's obviously we saw as wrong. So in the end, he twisted around and told it as Brett screwed Brett.
Do you understand it?
Not really, to be honest with you, because, and it's not the way that Stipples understand it, it's just the way that I'm interpreting it. So
yes, so yeah, you yeah, ask so we can
yeah, yeah. So like,
because that's a big topic.
So when you say like when he comes out and he says Brett screws Brett, is that just on the Raw the night after when he says Brett screw Brett? But how does Brett actually screw himself over? Like if he doesn't want to drop the title, then he doesn't want to drop the title. But like I understand he has to if he's leaving the promotion. But isn't there a different way that they could have done it?
Oh yeah, so that's the question everyone had, right? Like, why'd you do it that way? Brett never tapped out. What the fuck? What's going on? Brett never tapped out.
Well, yeah, because Brett obviously didn't lose the title. Effectively, he wasn't supposed to lose the title. But on the books, it'll say he lost the title. So what happened is, like, everyone was questioning Vince about this because it was, in the end, it was, like, perceived as it was his call. Obviously, it was his call. But at the time, kayfabe was not as strong as it is today. So we don't actually see it as, like, all the business things at the time in the back. So at the time, like obviously Shawn Michaels, they were starting to invest in Shawn Michaels. So they wanted to get the title on to Shawn Michaels, obviously. This was probably like this was the easiest way without making anyone look bad, but it obviously made Brett look really shit. Brett was the guy. He was the champion. And then the way they cut him out, it was unfair. But for Vince, it was like in his head, it was all right to him.
No one knows what the right call was, but Vince McMahon had to come out the next night and do a PR statement for a shambles of an ending to his pay-per-view that he just ran. And he had to explain, was it a Shoot interview?
It's supposedly a Shoot.
Did he break the fourth wall completely?
I don't think he did at the time. Because he did in the Attitude Era, like the promo, but he didn't do
it. It wasn't a promo, was it?
No.
Yeah, so it was just for the media, like it was a PR move.
Yeah, after 20, it looked like a PR move.
It wasn't kayfabe, it was a Shoot interview.
Because the way it looked like a PR media, but it was like...
I'm pretty sure it was, because he wasn't... Yeah. Vince McMahon never intended to be a character on screen. He was just doing a PR statement for his company for their shambles of an ending, and people took that as the biggest heel promo ever. Because he, in that interview, explaining why their pay-per-view ended like that, why that all had to go that way, people thought, you're the biggest Gronk ever.
So this guy's...
He shifted the blame to Brett.
Yeah, so this guy's being 100% himself, not even in character.
No.
Doing a normal interview just to explain himself and his company.
Yeah.
And people thought that he was that much of a bad guy.
Because he essentially shifted all the blame to Brett for not only screwing Brett, but like screwing everyone who paid for the pay-per-view, screwing everyone, really. Big fuck you to everyone.
I mean, in his cognition, he probably saw it that way as well. Like, even if it was like just a PR statement, he probably saw it as Brett should have just dropped the title.
He's basically like, look, cunts, it wasn't my fault. It was Brett's fault for being a Gronk. Brett screwed Brett. I didn't screw Brett. And then that just, instead of being a clean
PR statement
to sort of shift the blame to the performers not listening to him or whatever, it just turned into the most evil thing he could have said about those. He'd handled it terribly, thus becoming inadvertently the biggest villain in wrestling.
Well, obviously, this is just a start. So this is just like the foundation being laid out. Obviously, this wasn't all supposed to be intended. This was all just like, it was just like caught up in the moment. He had to do these things, and it all became naturally because he came off as like a natural bad guy. But
maybe the guy's just an absolute fucking Gronk in real life. Then, like,
well, that's what starts this. That character's so close to, well, so we think anyway. But that character is this Vince turned up to 11. They saw that worked. They saw they got a lot of heat for that. They saw they got a lot of bad PR from that statement. So they decided to put Vince on TV and do exactly what he did in that interview as the corporate guy who blames it on the little guy. But they turn it up to 100. And then you get corporate big boss Vince McMahon. No chance in hell, you know.
Probably the greatest villain of all time.
That was an organic heel turn that was never meant to happen.
And obviously, this would be nothing without Stone Cold, though, because Stone Cold, being the little guy, he was represented as like the middle class guy who was kind of like just like F you to the boss at the time.
Yeah, before you continue with that, I just have one question. So, is it universally known from ex wrestlers and everything like that Vince McMahon's a Gronk, or is he actually like a nice guy that just plays a bad guy?
Both.
Like, how do ex wrestlers who have either been shafted or have ever been. Whoever, even in the Hall of Fame, how do they feel about him?
I think everyone has a universal understanding that he is actually a fucking genius. You know, fans don't think that, but everyone who works with Vince knows that he knows the go. But they also know that he's like Mr. Burns in that Simpsons episode where he's like allergic to everything. People tell stories about Vince like getting mad that he can't control that he sneezed and stuff. That stuff's real.
Oh my God, well.
I mean, it's not just that, though. He does, like, it seems to, like, every generation that's come through with Vince, he seems to have, like, a close circle. And every time that close circle is there, they're the guys who get treated well. But anyone outside of that circle, they kind of, like, can get shafted out at any point, any time.
No, but I don't think that's Vince's fault.
Yeah.
I don't think people think Vince is, like, a dirtbag. I think they respect him, but they do think he has these, like,
nutty ideas and stuff like that.
Yeah, these quirks to him as like the crazy, like the character is not that different from the real Vince.
Like the biggest example would be Moxley recently. Moxley doesn't hate Vince, but the things he was presented, Vince's like idea of things just kind of like turned him off from WWE's side.
They don't think he's a Gronk, but they do think he's a bit crazy with power, but they all have a mutual respect for Vince.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like we've all had a boss that we've absolutely fucking hated and thought that they were a Gronk, right? Like, surely those, you know, the lower level wrestlers that all just get released, get rehired, surely they think he's a Gronk.
No, I think everyone respects Vince. I mean, you can, every shoot interview ever post when they leave the WWE, no one really ever speaks illy of Vince.
But are they scared that they're going to get sued and they can't go up against him?
Nah, because they'll shit on everyone else. Even CM Punk. CM Punk in the pipe bomb promo wasn't even about Vince. He was mainly shitting on Laurinaitis and Triple H and that. I think they all respect Vince. And we can't not respect Vince. But they'll shoot on Michael Hayes, or they'll shoot on people around Vince. I don't know if that's because that's the people they deal with, but it seems that everyone has a mutual respect for Vince McMahon, the person, but they don't agree with the machine, and they don't agree with how he has things set out.
A good example of this would be the recent WrestleMania. You had Gronk, the ex-football player, come on. So Gronk was expected to leap off like the...
Gronk!
He was expected to leap off like this high altitude, like a stage, onto the, like a bunch of people on the ground. But the problem is when he was doing it, he was obviously scared. So Vince McMahon went up and did it himself.
At 70-something years old, Vince McMahon took a bump off a balcony to show Gronk that it was fine. To show the fucking young, fit football player that it was fine to take a bump.
And this is after a hip replacement.
Yeah, so Vince, that's the other thing that people don't get, that people closest to him have always said, that if the company is taking an L, Vince isn't ignoring the fans. If the company takes an L, Vince takes that. He takes the L. He takes responsibility for it. If the company's winning, he takes full responsibility for it. It's the people around Vince, the nonsensical yes men, that sort of, you know, make everything fucking diluted and fuck everything up.
Yeah, but I think I was also, I don't know if I was talking to you or me, or even maybe even you, Dipple, I can't remember. But I remember someone saying to me that once Vince McMahon retires and eventually drops his company to Triple H, that it would be in better hands than what it is now.
Yeah, so people think, but I don't think they think that it's because Vince McMahon's a prick. I think people always assume that he's losing his touch, he's getting old. He doesn't have his finger on the pulse anymore. But a lot of times people say that, but it always turns out that he's always right in the end. You know what I mean? And that's what everyone says. Everyone's like, even the guys that find success with Vince, even Triple H himself, he's come out to say, I always doubt the old man. I always like, I think he's got it wrong and I've got it right. And then it always pans out that he's always had it right. I don't know. They all respect Vince and they all know that he gets shit on more than he probably should. Because when you lay the cards down on the table, he's the reason why any of these people are doing any of this. He's a genius and the internet marks are not. That's why they're not Vince McMahon, mate.
An easy example is like, because Vince has been on there for 40 plus years. And you have AEW recently just signed up, and like everyone's shitting on AEW, and we've given the same problems. Like a lot of people are given the same complaints to WWE. But the thing is, Vince has come out and pulled through, and like he's come up with good stuff over the years. It's not just like inconsistent, and then he has one good idea. It's always like high and low. And
sometimes it works shit, though. It is shit, but Vince takes that. He takes that on the chin. Is what I'm trying to say. Him as a person, the system is bad, but him as a person. I don't think people think he's a bad person.
Okay.
If that answers your question.
Yeah. So what were you saying before about Stone Cold, Dibble?
So Stone Cold at the time he was on his way up. And at the time he was kind of a heel, but he just recently turned face because he had the double turn with Bret at the time.
So what's the double turn then?
The double turn would be when a good guy being the face and a heel being the bad guy, they face each other, and in that match, or sometimes in a promo, they kind of swap sides, and where the good guy started to be perceived as a bad guy, and the bad guy as a good guy.
So what's a good guy?
A good guy with a face, and that'd be the person who'd be like the, eat your prayers, say prayers, eat your vitamins, like the guy
eat your prayers, kind of, boy.
That kind of guy who represents everything good and morally upright. Like, he doesn't, like, have to turn to cheating. He doesn't have to turn to, like, backhanded tactics, like hitting people in the nuts and stuff. He just does everything on the, like...
Why are the heroes called faces and the bad guys called heels? Anyway.
I try to look this up. Like,
why don't they call them butts?
I try to look this up, and, like, the term comes from 1914, but it doesn't exactly explain where the origin is. I mean, I can definitely look at, probably like you can find it in theater or somewhere else, but the term face and heel, like it just feels unnatural to me now at this time. It's like face is like the good guy, heel is the bad guy.
Yeah. So while we look that up, when we're talking about like the double turn, so Stone Cold was the heel and Bret Hart was the face.
Guy. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. And then they switched and Bret Hart became a heel and Stone Cold became
So what
was that match? Why did they have that match? Is there anything to it? Is there a backstory? What's the go with that?
Yeah, so it starts at Royal Rumble, and this was the 1997 Royal Rumble. At the time, Stone Cold was in the Royal Rumble. Bret Hart was obviously in the Rumble as well. and Stone Cold was eliminated by Bret Hart, I believe, off the top of my head. But what happened is none of the refs actually saw him being eliminated. So he kind of snuck in and he kind of played like a possum and like he was able to like kind of hide away. So what happened was Bret was actually still in the ring. He was still in the Royal Rumble. And then out of nowhere, Stone Cold comes in and eliminates Bret Hart. But the problem is Stone Cold was already eliminated. So after all that happened, it kind of started a blood feud between Bret Hart and Stone Cold. And this went on to WrestleMania. And it became like Bret Hart started showing a bit more violent tenacity towards Stone Cold because Stone Cold was like, he was always the bad guy. He kind of pushed like the evil out of Bret Hart at the time. But Stone Cold was so tough that when the match happened, no matter what Bret Hart threw at Stone Cold was able to stand up and not give up. So eventually the match was stopped. The main point was that Stone Cold, he never quit out of the match. He never even though Bret Hart had him all these submissions and stuff,
yep.
Stone Cold would never quit. So okay. Bret Hart still walked away with the victory, but it was Stone Cold who really walked out as a victor because he was never lost. So that kind of started a double turn where fans are perceiving Stone Cold as a good guy because he never quit. He had that kind of the good guy mentality. And Bret Hart was kind of started being perceived as a chicken shit heel and stuff like that.
Okay. Fair enough. So then how does that tie into Vince McMahon as well, though?
Yeah. So in the next year's Royal Rumble, in the 1998 Royal Rumble, Stone Cold was actually the winner at the time. And Stone Cold being not so much a corporate guy, being a bit more of the best way to explain it, he's kind of a representative of the middle class kind of guy as well. He was not Vince McMahon's guy, basically. So he won the Royal Rumble, and he was destined to face Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. And obviously after the match, Shawn Michaels was already on his way out because he broke his back. So Stone Cold faced Shawn Michaels. He won. Then next night in Raw, Vince McMahon wanted to kind of clean up Stone Cold a bit just to be a better representative of a champion. So he told Stone Cold to come in professional attire, come to the ring. And Stone Cold kind of did because Stone Cold had a tie. He was still wearing jean shorts. And he was wearing a standard black tee. So he was not what Vince McMahon was looking for. But Vince kind of compromised at the time. So at the time, Vince told him he had to do certain things. He had to be not so much be as rough around the edges, I guess. Because Stone Cold was a guy who would put his middle fingers up at someone. He'd swear a lot. He'd run his own show and run by his own rules. So, and Vince McMahon was not down for this, so he tried to put these restrictions on Stone Cold. But obviously, Stone Cold wasn't taking none of that. So, Stone Cold just stunned Vince McMahon. And from there on, it kind of started spiraling where Vince McMahon started losing more control over himself or over Stone Cold. And that started affecting his character because he started becoming more more of a bad guy, more of a corporate, big boss type, a asshole heel, asshole boss. And he started trying to put his restrictions on Stone Cold and eventually trying to turn him to the right side.
Uh-huh.
And this kind of became a foundation of what we would know as Mr. McMahon. I mean, do you have any questions about that?
Every blue-collar worker wants to punch their fucking boss in the face.
Correct.
Everyone has a dickhead boss that they want to punch in the face. And probably Stone Cold's done. So everyone, every Monday night, got to tune in and watch Stone Cold do what they have all wanted to do throughout the week on a Monday too, when you most likely had the shittest day at work because it's a Monday.
Yeah.
Everyone's got Mondayitis and everyone gets to tune in and watch someone like them beat up his boss. And that is why that storyline and why Vince is probably one of the best heels in the business was because it was art imitating life, mate. You live out your fantasies on Monday Night Raw. Watch Stone Cold beat up his boss so you can feel like it's you beating up your boss, mate. The end.
That'd be mad, but.
So, in effect, the Austin McMahon storyline turned the tide back to the WWF after Hogan's heel turn turned the tide to the WCW.
Yeah, so then what's the progressive, what's the timeline after that? So you got Stone Cold beating up his boss. What happened to the
greatest segment ever? Just beating the shit out of his boss all the time, bro. It's the best thing ever. You put that on every day of the week, bro. People are like, yes! Fuck my boss, you know?
Yeah, so what happens from there? What's the next progressive? What's the next step for Stone Cold after that?
come in every now and then and beat up your boss every now and then, part time. Just, I don't know. It was that was a defining storyline for Stone Cold, to just be the badass blue collar guy who loves to drink beer.
But obviously, because Stone Cold was a WWE champion, or was perceived as like the main guy who runs the show, Vince McMahon being the bad guy, he would always have to, because he's not a wrestler, so he'd have to get someone to do all the job for him. So he'd get like The Rock, he'd get The Big Show, he'd get Triple H. He'd always put like a certain person in front of Stone Cold just to kind of like be like a ploy. And that's where Stone Cold has to like, Stone Cold's whole character was beating up the objective and then beating up your boss.
Okay then, so from all of this, we've spoken about, you know, off the podcast, we've spoken about your favorite pay-per-view, Ramiz, which was Invasion, correct?
Oh, yes.
So
not my favorite pay-per-view. Oh, how dare you?
sorry, not his favorite pay-per-view. But is that where that quote comes from? Like, you know what I need, that quote?
Yeah, okay.
So how does that come about?
So Stone Cold beats his boss up all the time. Everyone loves it. Turns the tide and the WWF win the war. Or because everyone loves to watch it. Everyone loves it. Like I say, I've said it 100 times already on this podcast, but everyone loves watching the guys beat up his boss. It's amazing. Beats up his boss even more. Beats up his boss some more. They win the war, and then they go to WrestleMania 17. Is it their first unopposed Mania? Because 16 was 2000 and WCW was still around.
2001, yes.
So WrestleMania 17 is their first ever granddaddy of them all without opposition. So it's a fucking barn burner. It's their big super show. They put on all their talent. They got Paul Heyman up from ECW to commentate. And they run their main event for their first ever unopposed show, The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Because it's your first big show, there's no more Starcade. There's no more rival anyone. You are the big show. You need a big ending for your big ass show. After the big unopposed pay-per-view, they needed a big ending. And their big ending was after a couple of years of this guy beating up his boss, the big ending for WrestleMania was he would align with his boss for some insane reason. And why would Stone Cold do that? Every Monday I tune in to watch this guy beat up his boss so I can feel like I beat up my boss. Now he's shaking hands with his boss. Now he's his boss's best buddy. Fuck him. I want him to Stone Cold stun his boss. So Stone Cold aligns with McMahon and thus becomes a corporate sellout, something that no one wanted to happen. Becomes a heel, a bad guy. He's the boss's pet. And so he becomes a new Stone Cold. The corporate Stone Cold wears a suit, smiles for the camera, doesn't flip off anyone. Good guy who's actually a bad guy. And so come Invasion time, Vince McMahon wanted the Stone Cold with a fire lit under his ass. He didn't want corporate Stone Cold anymore. He needed the old Stone Cold. The one who doesn't take shit from nobody. The one who flips off his boss and is a fucking bad motherfucker. He didn't need this new Stone Cold that you know, kisses babies and drinks Bud Light. He needs a Stone Cold that drinks Budweiser, you know?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes a little bit more sense as well. So then what are some other notable heel turns that people might know?
One would be Shawn Michaels and Jannetty. With the barbershop. So
better say his name right, bro. Chuck in the Chattahoochee River.
Explain that to me. What's that? What about the barbershop?
So, Marty Jannetty and...
That Shawn coward, Marty Jannetty.
So, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty used to be a tag team from the 1980s. They were probably the most popular tag team at the time. They were called
The Rockers.
Yeah, The Rockers. So, being The Rockers, they're hot. Everyone was loving him. They were too young.
Did you say they were hot, bro?
You get the term. The crowd was loving him.
You continue on.
You get the term. But yeah, so from there, 1990s, obviously Shawn Michaels was a guy who was always popular, but he obviously had like a chip on his shoulder as well. So he always wanted to go solo because he thought he might have like outgrown this whole tag team business. So in order to move on from that, he always had to drop Marty Jannetty. So come the barbershop with the Brutus Beefcake, they had like a segment where Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty were being interviewed. But what happened was, when it seemed like they were going to like continue on as a tag team, Shawn Michaels threw Marty Jannetty through the window.
Let's get the facts right. Shawn Michaels trying to pat Marty Jannetty on the back, and Marty Jannetty to care, try to jump through the barbershop window to escape the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels for some reason. I don't know why, but
I mean, that would be the right answer.
Why he jumped through that barbershop window himself, I don't know.
But yeah, Shawn Michaels obviously, even though he tried to help him, and like, I don't know what happened, but yeah, Shawn Michaels was now like effectively a bad guy from that, because he turned his back on Marty Jannetty.
That was a big heel turn, because everyone loved the Rockers. It was like young babyface tag team. All the little girls loved them, you know. And Shawn Michaels said, fuck the lot of you. And fuck this barbershop window, bro.
So it seems like from what we've discussed previously outside of the podcast as well, that this was there's a divide in the wrestling community about whether or not he was thrown, or whether or not he jumped, or if he's a coward, or whatever. What's your personal opinion, Ramiz, on what transpired that very day?
My personal opinion is that what happened should have always happened, and the right thing happened, and it was Marty Jannetty running away from Shawn Michaels trying to escape through the barbershop window for some reason. I don't know why he did that. Coward.
And Dipple, what
I think Ian was right. It was the act of cowardice.
Yeah.
So you believe he's a coward, huh? You're both getting thrown into the river.
It's in the Chattahoochee River, bro.
No, so that... skyrocketed Shawn Michaels' solo career.
Of course.
As a heel?
Yeah, Diesel.
Yeah.
Brought in Diesel as his big guy. And then from there on, he just became the man.
Everyone knows Shawn Michaels now, bro. This guy couldn't even pronounce Marty Jannetty's name properly before. Who the fuck's Marty Jannetty?
Yeah, but I'm still scared that he might kill me.
So,
Shawn Weed or...
What are your thoughts about Shawn Michaels, Ramiz? Tell me.
Oh, mate, you want to start this? You want to start at this podcast? Fucking Shawn Michaels. If you ask me who the greatest wrestler of all time is, 100 out of 100 times, I will tell you it's the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. If you tell me who the biggest gronk in professional wrestling is, 100 out of 100 times, it's the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Because there is far too much evidence. There's far too many testimonials that Shawn Michaels is an absolute gronk.
But what about when he found God?
Even when he found God, it was full of shit. He did not find... That's when you find God, that's what you do when you got no more excuses. When your back's up against the wall and you can't explain yourself out of anything ever again, you're like, look, I'm born again, bro. I'll never be a gronk to you ever again. He has screwed more people than Bret Hart. Bret Hart's just the most famous one. The Click, everyone knows about The Click, and I don't think Shawn Michaels isn't a gronk. I mean, Shawn Michaels screwed almost everyone. And there's too many people who don't like him, from the Honky Tonk Man to Rob Van Dam to everybody in between.
And maybe Marty Jannetty.
Yeah, Marty Jannetty too. Marty who? Yeah, Shawn Michaels is just absolute gronk. Screws over everyone. He still does that Click stuff now as an old man. You know, not happy for anyone. There's too many people in the industry who say that he's a gronk. There's a story of, and you can see it on live, you know, on the recording when he versed Vader, and he's supposed to drop the elbow on Vader, but then he lands on his feet because Vader was supposed to move or something. And he's like, move, you know, you big gronk. Like, it's just been a gronk to him. And apparently after that match, Vader went backstage and started crying and said, you know, if I don't do what he said, he's gonna get me kicked out of the business. I'm going to lose my job. Like, yeah, that's what Shawn is. He's just a fucking scumbag, mate. Absolute scumbag.
What a gronk.
Use his position in the company to, you know. So everyone knows that he's I sort of don't know how much of his career we should attribute to his skill and how much of it we should attribute to his fucking, yeah, political skills.
I mean, that's just probably like one of the lightest stories of Shawn Michaels. There's deeper, like, worse ones around.
Shawn Michaels versus Stone Cold to usher in the Austin era.
Lost my smell too.
Yeah, that as well. But to usher in the Austin era, to let Stone Cold become Stone Cold, Shawn Michaels had to drop the belt at WrestleMania. Which one was it?
1998, 1998, 2016, 2015, 2014.
Yeah, so Stone Cold's going to go over. Stone Cold is going to become Stone Cold. Stone Cold almost did not become Stone Cold because Shawn Michaels didn't want to drop the belt. He didn't want to do the job for Austin. There's a story that The Undertaker told himself where he had to sit in Gorilla, which is the backstage area where everyone is.
Yeah.
Where Vince sits, where everyone sits, just before you come out. Undertaker had to sit in Gorilla and tape up his hands, because if Shawn didn't do the job, Undertaker was going to beat the shit out of him in real life. Shoot, beat the fucking shit out of him.
Well.
And he goes, I'm going to sit here, and if this goes wrong and it doesn't go the way it's supposed to go, then you'll learn about the dead man today, bro. Yeah.
You're going to learn today.
So, before when we were talking as well,
Shawn doesn't lose belts.
Dipple said that Shawn Michaels was starting to, I don't know, I can't remember if it's a decline or on his way out, because he's broke his back. But when he said he broke his back, he put that in quotation marks. Well, yeah. What was that about?
Because every time Shawn Michaels, it was time for Shawn Michaels to drop the belt, like that Stone Cold story, like with Vader, because that Vader thing was supposed to be a long program too. We're supposed to lose to Vader and then win back from Vader at Rumble or whatever. Every time it was time for Shawn to lose, fucking, oh, I broke my back. I lost my smile. I got something. He's got all these fucking excuses. Doesn't show up. Doesn't, he's fucking full of shit, bro. No one remembers all of this fucking shit that he used to pull. Like, it was still the territory days. Like, you know, oh man, I got to have surgery, so I'm just going to relinquish the belt, but I can't show up for the match. Shit like that.
Yeah.
I don't put anyone over, but the boys in the clique, that's the only people he put over.
Yeah.
The Oi Bays.
And in a sense, Vince McMahon was kind of like, he was one of his boys at the time as well.
Honky Tonk Man says that him and Vince McMahon probably had a gay relationship together, to be honest. That's not my that's not my words. That's the Honky Tonk Man's words, bro.
But Vince McMahon absolutely loves Shawn, eh?
Loves him. But, you know, Shawn drew him a lot of money. So, you know, was it stupid for McMahon to go with Shawn all those times? No. Is Shawn Michaels still the GOAT? Yes, if you ask me, he's still the GOAT. But he's a Gronk GOAT. That's all I got to say about that. And that's the bottom line.
But, you know, it's funny. It's funny because the amount of times in school or wherever you were and you'd brought up wrestling, the first wrestling move anyone would try and do to you is a Sweet Chin Music, eh?
Of course, bro. He's the GOAT. He's the GOAT.
Everyone loves him.
He's the GOAT, bro.
Shawn Michaels, like, as long as you don't know, like, too much about the backstory, like, behind-the-scenes stuff, is definitely one of the greatest of all time. Everyone can love him.
You can't deny he's Mr. WrestleMania, the showstopper. You can't.
But once you start looking behind the curtain and you start seeing the like, type of person Shawn Michaels was, it just changes, like, a lot of perspective for a lot of people.
You never meet your heroes, bro. Because you never know what they really like, you know?
Like, there's the stories of Bret Hart, Sonny, and Shawn Michaels, and that's some of, like, the most fucked up stuff you'll hear.
Wasn't that fucked up?
Explain it.
I reckon they all banged Sonny, to be honest.
I mean, as far as I know, it was supposed to be Sonny and Bret were seeing each other, but, like, at the time, Bret was already married as well.
Yeah, Shawn Michaels was spreading rumors that Bret was having an affair with Diva at the time. Done fucked up Bret's life.
Oh, well.
While Sonny was still banging, getting banged by Shawn Michaels.
And they were like, oh, no.
They even had a promo where, like, Sonny was suggestive that he was, she was giving him a blowjob.
Sonny was giving everyone blowjobs, bro.
But in the promo on TV, it was, like, suggested that it was happening.
Yeah, she was giving a blowjob on TV, probably. You don't know that.
So the Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty barbershop.
Yeah.
Heel turn
catapulted Shawn's career.
Catapulted his career. So what other heel turns catapulted other people's careers? Because we've got Stone Cold's one was catapulted as well by,
that's a good ass question,
by heel turn. Who else?
I mean, in more recent terms, it'd be Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan would be one. Daniel Bryan, he had the Money in the Bank contract at the time. This was in 2010, I believe, or 11. And at the time it was Mark Henry was running the Hall of Pain gimmick. So it was Mark Henry and Big Show was feuding at the time over the World Heavyweight Championship. And then because Daniel Bryan was small, everyone kind of didn't see him as like potentially winning the championship. So obviously Daniel Bryan won using the cashing clause. So off the top of my head, I remember Mark Henry and Big Show having a special gimmick match. I think it was like one of those like last man standing or a cage match, something like that. And Daniel Bryan capitalized with the Money in the Bank. So one thing would be though, do you understand what the Money in the Bank is, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So Money in the Bank, he cashed in with the Money in the Bank, he won. And this brought out a more edgier Daniel Bryan at the time, because Daniel Bryan was kind of a good guy at the time as well. So he became a bit more of like a, he became a heel. He was like,
Is this before the Yes Movement?
Kind of a bit of both, because at the time he was.
It was way before, bro.
Because he started like in
just
that run.
Just because you were doing yeses doesn't mean the Yes Movement was alive.
He started doing the yes stuff. Yes and no stuff. He started
doing it, but the yes movement was WrestleMania 30 way later.
Yeah.
Years later.
Yeah.
The yes movement itself there, but like the crowds that are like doing it along the way, like it's, I can't remember exactly when they started doing it, but it definitely started there though.
The yes movement.
The yes movement like is like,
not until fucking,
WrestleMania 30, 2013. Yeah, 14. But yeah,
way later.
So yeah, Dan Bryan started being a bit more heel. He was like starting to cheat a bit more, especially because he was facing Big Show and Mark Henry. Because like these guys are giants, and he was always that small guy. So he was using a bit more of a heel tactics, trying to win. So he became like a huge heel then. But it wasn't until he started bringing in AJ Lee that he really became like a massive heel turn, because he had started having this girlfriend who was really good for him, and he was like treating her like trash every second of the way. It was just like, it's one of the things where like it definitely put, Daniel Bryan was already big on the map, but I don't think anyone saw how big it was going to be after that heel turn if that all that didn't happen.
Are you saying that? So what are you saying? How do you sum up that heel turn for Daniel Bryan's career?
Yeah.
Without that heel turn, I didn't think like a lot of things wouldn't have happened, because like he started doing the yes stuff, but yeah, and the no stuff, but the crowd wouldn't have picked it up without that, him doing that. Because he was saying yes. So the crowd started doing yes as well. But in response to that, he started doing the no stuff. And obviously the crowd was already saying yes. So he started like building the grounds for a lot of stuff like we know Daniel Bryan for today. Like the crowd, he was playing the crowd a lot as well at the time. That's definitely one I would think. And obviously Mark Henry would be another one. Mark Henry and the Hall of Pain. So Mark Henry, obviously, everyone knows Mark Henry.
Was he already a heel at the time? Maybe not, man.
That's the thing. I'm trying to remember. Like,
that was a heel turn.
It was definitely a heel turn, but like I don't remember like exactly if he was a heel before that or after that. Because when he came in the Hall of Pain, it was probably like the biggest revitalization of a career I've seen in recent years. That was like definitely a big one. There was Mark Henry. Obviously, everyone knows him as the world's strongest man, a legitimate strongman winner. Well, I'm not sure if he won it or if he was just competitor, but we'll just say he won it.
Editing yourself, bro. Just go, lad.
But yeah, so Mark Henry, one of the strongest men in the world, he's never had like a, at the time, he's only been a tag team title champion, I believe. I don't think he's ever held like a mid-card championship. So when it came time, like he actually got the okay to go for the big title, he became one of the meanest guys you've ever seen with the Hall of Pain. And this was like a huge revitalization because he started showing cases and like a lot of stuff that everyone kind of like expected him to be as well. He was just like a big badass guy who was just like taking no shit from nobody.
Yeah, so heel turns are important, like Dick Dipper was saying, to revitalize people's careers. They're good for someone who's stale. When they turn heel, they can really change their career, put them in the second gear.
Yeah.
My final question about heel turns. And I don't know why, I've had this question in my head since we started this. Because you see so many of the same people turn heel and then go back to being a good guy and then turn bad, then go back to be a good guy, then turn bad. Who is the wrestler with the most heel turns?
Big Show.
And why?
There's actually been a case where I can't remember which episode it was or when it was, but there was a case where, like, at the start of the episode, it seemed like he was a face, and then by the end of the show, he was a heel again. I can't remember if it was, like, the other way around. I remember he did a double turn the same night, and it was, like, so weird. But the guy switches, like, nearly every year. And it also changes, like, depending on who his dance partner
is. He's a utility man, bro. Yeah. Did you say dance partner?
He did say dance partner.
Dance partner, it's the same thing.
All right, Fandango.
No, so
wrestling is a sport.
So, yeah, he's just turning on a show every night.
He hasn't had an ongoing role in the WWE for yonks. And he's just a utility man, just comes in, does his bit, and whatever bit that needs to be, whether it's a face bit or a heel bit, he's in there to do it. You know, his music hits and you just know, oh, he's whatever the other guy isn't. Like, rocks up. Music hits and you're like, the music hits and you're like, yeah, it depends on what he's coming out for.
So then you've got the Big Show. Who else is someone like a utility man who will just turn and be whoever they need them to be?
Kane was like that for a little bit.
Kane? Oh. Gane's been majority heel in the first half, but he's been majority face.
No, I mean lately. I mean, these guys are just living out their twilight years, you know. I mean, they're not old, but they're not regulars anymore. So they just come out wherever they need to come out.
Isn't Kane like a mayor of a bloody city or something?
Yeah, of Knox County.
Glenn Jacobs.
Yeah. Parts unknown.
Yeah. Then, so he came back to be a heel in that DX story, right? Or were their faces? Yeah, the Brothers of Destruction, they turned heel for that little bit, but then he'll come back later as a good guy and then come back later as a bad guy. Depends where they need him.
Yeah. Same thing with Christian. Christian was kind of like at the, before he retired, he was kind of like flopping between heel and face all the time, especially like in the early 2000s as well.
But there are people who are born to do one side, who cannot do any other side. Even if they try, there's got to be one side. They're all born, they're natural heels in the business.
Ric Flair.
All right. So that's my next question then. Who is born to be one-sided and tried to do the other side, but it failed?
We're trying to go past kayfabe because those guys are always going to do that. There weren't many switches back then, back in the day, because for all intents and purposes, that's them, that's who they were.
Yeah.
In their real life, 7 days of the week, the Sheik was the Sheik and shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Ric Flair was definitely like the biggest heel, but like at some point in career, he started becoming like a face. Like he was kind of cheered more than even if he was doing heel things. So like he becomes like...
But was Ric Flair was always a heel?
Majority of his career is heel.
Yeah, most of the time.
Yeah, because all I remember is him bleeding, strutting, and just low-blowing people. That's all I remember.
Yeah, sticking around a bit too long for that one, but...
Yeah.
I mean, Randy Orton is a bona fide heel. In his life, he's just a prick. He is just a heel in all aspects of his life. They try to turn him face, and it doesn't work. The only time him face works is when he's like an anti-hero and he still doesn't high-five fans and kiss babies. They tried to run when he got his first title run, the youngest world champion ever, beating Big Crispin Noir.
Yeah.
And they try to turn him face, the face of the company, and he's just... doesn't like people, man. He just doesn't like people. So they turned him heel again after the Triple H run, and it was fine.
Jericho would be one. Like, his face moments, I don't think he has as many good face moments as he does his heel moments, because he's probably one of the biggest popular guys in wrestling history, and most of his like big moments are all as a heel.
But there's some people that can't even, if they want to be face, they can't play face.
I'm trying to remember what's a good example of that.
Good old Randall.
Yeah. You have
So what, you've got Brock Lesnar, who's always a heel, correct?
No. He at like his 2003 stuff, he's a bit of a face. And
yeah, even as a face, he's always a heel, like, you know. He's He can't play a face. He can't be out there high fiving kids and that.
Yeah, because you can't go out there high fiving kids after you've beaten up a guy with one leg, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Brock Lesnar's an animal. Everyone remembers that first run. The first run only went for 2 years. Fucking impact, mate.
Then you got John Cena. Was John Cena ever a heel?
Yeah, I like John Cena as a heel too. Fucking big doctor.
He came in basically as a heel.
He came in as a face, as the worst face in fucking ever.
Oh, yeah, true.
He fell on his face. That's what happened to him. He came in
as
ruthless aggression guy.
And as Undertaker's protege at the time.
No, even before he was Undertaker's protege, and you slapped Kurt Angle in the face.
Yeah, it wasn't he right after that he was became Undertaker's protege, or right after that match?
No, not right after that match, no. What was he doing with the Undertaker? He was like floating around in the mid-card and was almost about to be gone.
I just remember like after that match, Undertaker comes up to John Cena, and he kind of gives him like that props, and then after
But he doesn't become Undertaker Jr., doesn't start riding around doubling on Undertaker's motorcycle. Undertaker's tag team partner, bro. No. He still floats around on that lower card until he goes heel, revitalize his career. He starts rapping about people and shit like that.
Oh, Dr. fucking Thugonomics.
Yeah, the doc. Fuck, he was actually pretty cool then. That was mad.
Is that when he made the championship a fucking spinning belt?
The US title?
Yeah, the spinning belt.
Yeah. Fucking good shit.
I remember John Cena as that as well.
Good shit until he became the biggest heeled face ever, when everyone fucking hated him and he wasn't even trying to be hated.
Speaking of heels who don't make good faces, Scott Steiner is definitely one, because when he came to the WWE, he was kind of perceived as a good guy, but then he ended up becoming a bad guy. Anyway.
Scott Steiner's own fault for not being able to. Tremendous wrestler, terrible professional wrestler. Can do all the moves, but fucking can't walk straight without falling over, bro. I don't know what's wrong with that guy,
bro. So then you've got CM Punk. What about him? What I don't even know what to make of that. Like,
CM Punk is a fuckweed in real life too. just destined to be heel, but you know, I don't know.
I mean, his heel turns are like definitely exaggerations of like anyone's character, because he had the Straight Society, which is basically like a messiah of like straight edge, which is like definitely, and you're not going to see that, like it's not like close to his character at all. The other one was the leader of Nexus, which is just like a representative of like the new kid, the generation. The
Straight Edge Society is CM Punk turn up to 11. He hates being talked to at airports and shit. He's a prick, but he's a good prick. Like, I like that about him, but he's like a prick in real life. And that's, so he's like Randy Orton. So just turn himself up to 11 and just, you know, destined to be a prick.
Yeah. And I think that another thing as well was, that when we were discussing this episode before we actually recorded it, you told me JBL was the same. He was he just turned himself up to 11 and then he just became, he revitalized his career and became something so much more.
That's the real secret. And that's what people, too many people, even today, especially in AEW, too many people, they're there to play a character. But the characters that succeed in the wrestling business are the ones that are just themselves turned up to 11. They're always the ones that stick. Even The Undertaker, to a degree, man, this is like a stoic guy who likes motorcycles, who, you know, also just likes being a tough guy. Like, you know what I mean? Just turn yourself up to 11, man. You don't need to fucking be some random shit. Those are the ones that stay, that stick. When people can see, because people can see through that TV screen, can see who, you know, who you're really being yourself. They can tell when you're not being bad. That's why Roman doesn't ever fucking work. I hope this Roman is a more real Roman, because he's always playing a character on TV.
And seeing that, there are certain guys like Goldust and then...
yeah, how do you know Goldust doesn't have like those weird thoughts in his head where he, you know, it's a bit strange. Bit of a freak.
Just another question about JBL really quickly. I remember he was part of that. I remember playing video games on like, I can't remember if it was Nintendo 64 or PS1.
APA.
And yeah, he was part of some faction with some black dude. Yeah, it's alright, man. Like, Farouk. I don't know his name. Farouk, that's
Ron
his name.
Simmons.
Farouk. Yes, that's his
first
name.
First ever African American world champion in history.
Very nice.
Yes. Very successful wrestler.
Yes. What happened to him once JBL went to the like limousine?
So he was already like
on his way out. He was older.
Yeah, he was already on his way out, because he's the toilet. The main part of his career was actually like when JBL was doing jack shit. You know, Ron Simmons was already a household name back in WCW, and even to a degree, football. Like, yeah. So he was already a bit older. He was more like, people don't really get, people see Bradshaw as the star of the APA, but he was more like
the second fiddle.
Bradshaw's mentor, you know?
Ah, okay. Yep.
He was like, he had already headed the Nation of Domination, you know? That's probably when he was at his prime. But yeah, so by the time the APA in the Ruthless Aggression era, or like after Attitude Era, I think Farouk was already taking a step back at the start of 2002 and that.
He started doing more like, his whole gimmick started becoming more like the, just saying damn whenever like, there was like an opportunity to say damn. Because I don't know if you've ever seen it.
But actually, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so like whenever like he comes on screen, you just expect him to just say one word. So by then, like he already became like, he was already relegated to like, just like a backstage presence, maybe like a...
But yeah, they were just at different points of their career.
But and JBL was obviously...
JBL, yeah. It was JBL's time to boom, I guess. But Ron was already done. Ron had already been world champion. Yeah. He was already just riding out to the sunset, you know.
Does that answer your question about JBL, or did you have...
Yeah, I just remember him coming into the arena in his limousine with the bullhorns on it.
One hell of a fucking character, bro. I love that character.
And then he comes out with his cowboy hat and that. He was a pretty badass motherfucker.
Bro, his theme song is fucking bangs, bro.
Yeah, it does, actually.
I mean, when we were talking about Shawn Michaels and his... little antics in the back. JBL is, well, it's not to the same degree. He was definitely perceived as an asshole in the back as well.
Is he still commentating now or no?
Nah, let's take him off because he was a bully.
He was on, I think, this year, or was it?
Yeah, but they had to take him off permanently, like from ongoing, because, you know, he was bullying Mauro Ranallo. So, why are you laughing? It's not funny, bro. Fucking bullying, bro. Be a star. Don't be a bully. Be a star.
Today, I've actually learned a lot about heels and heel turns.
Well, what other questions you got about heels? Do you understand like heels?
No, I understand. I understand the role
of the villain.
Of the villain within the wrestling community, within the wrestling.
You know who's an amazing heel? William Regal.
100%. Oh, one of the best.
The greatest.
If only he didn't have that whole like drug issue at the end, he would be good to go like a good heel William Regal with a world title.
Don't you ever disrespect William Regal again, right?
No, he had the drug issue because he got caught.
King Stephen Regal ever again. A real man's man.
He's a man. Such a man.